Morning, everyone. Today's daf is daf Ayin Aleph, 71 in Avodah Zarah. We're starting on Ayin Amud Beis, and we're finishing up a sugya from yesterday, and then we'll start the today's daf. Sugya we're finishing up dealt with leaving the guy alone with the wine. Gemara yesterday went through a dozen different scenarios in which a guy was left alone with the wine, and essentially, one of the things that we learned yesterday, one of the big ideas that we learned yesterday, is that as long as there's some level of mirsus, of fear and trepidation, that he would be caught with the wine, so we assume, therefore, that he did not touch the wine. If, however, if he has security and some self-assurances that he's not going to be caught along with the wine, so then the wine is going to be problematic, as we are therefore concerned that he went ahead and did nisuch with the wine. The last scenario, the last thing.
Stuff like a bit of ice, though, like in every case.
Well, no, it's hard to.
A fun, they should say, no?
Yeah.
In case I say for the
right.
It's a double suffix, but most of them.
Correct. That was one of the issues that we dealt with yesterday. Is what degree of suffix are we talking about? Right. That was the suffix maga. I understand, but suffix maga versus suffix bia. Right, one of the discussions in yesterday's gemara was the level of suffix that we're dealing with. One of the last things we discussed yesterday was giving a key over to a non-Jew. Right? You give a key to the house, to the non-Jew. So Rava says, I'm not sure if it was Rava, but the rest of yesterday was Rava. But the Gemara said yesterday, that's fine. Meaning even though you gave the keys to your house, which now gives them access to your house, but the giving of the key, that was only about a safekeeping of the key, didn't actually allow access to the house itself. We're going to start right in the middle of the Amud. On Ayin Amud Beis, we learned this in a brayse as well. So the Gemara says, look, you see this in the world of Taharos. You don't want an Am Haaretz to touch your Taharos. Taharos refers to anything which you want to keep clean, pristine, not Tameh. And you give keys over to an Am Haaretz, and that allows him access to your house, but the Mishnah says it's fine. You just gave him the keys to hold the keys. He's not going to go into your house and touch any of your Taharos, and that's the Mishnah. Mishnah in Taharos. Now the Gemara makes the following observation. So the Gemara says, look, if your Taharos remain Tahor, so do we need to even say anything about your Yayin Esach? Of course your Yayin Esach is going to be fine. So the Gemara says, wait a second. What do we just do? We just compare the issue of Taharos to the issue of Yayin Esach. And not only that, but we put Taharos on a higher level. The Meimra, the Taharos Alima Meyayin Esach. Really, that's the hierarchy, that Taharos belongs above Yayin Esach? And the Gemara says, yeah, in. Absolutely, that is the hierarchy. And now what the Gemara is going to do now is just prove that we're more concerned in general about Taharos than we are about Yayin Esach. And if we're in the case of Mafteach, if we're not concerned about Taharos, therefore we should certainly not be concerned about Yayin Esach. Okay, so let's see the Gemara go to work. The Gemara, because we had the following. Chaser shechaka b'mesipas. If I have a courtyard, and the division of the courtyard between the two properties is made with a mesipas. Mesipas is a very, very small little fence. It is nothing more than just a marker to indicate my side versus your side. So right away from Rav, what do you see? That if you have taharos on your side of the fence, they're tummy, meaning that your neighboring amaaretz is going to just simply reach over and touch the taharos. There's a border. There's a little fence separating the two properties. So Rav says, okay, so what? He's going to reach over the fence. He's going to touch your stuff. If, however, we took the same case, and instead of Am Haaretz being your neighbor, we're going to put an Ovei Kochavim as your neighbor, and you have wine in your chatzir, he's not going to touch it. Right? So you see right away, we're more cautious about Taharos than we are about Yayin Esach. In the world of Taharos, Rav says, assume your neighbor reached over and touched it. In the world of Yayin Esach, assume your non-Jewish neighbor did not reach over and touch it. Good. Rav Yochanan Amar, Aftaros, Aftaros. And Rav Yochanan says, everything's fine. The Yayin Esach is fine. The Taharos are also going to be fine as well. Meisve. So on this machlokus between Rav and Rav Yochanan, the Gemara is going to issue two challenges. Challenge number one. Look, Question number one is against Kashla Rav. Question number one is against Rav. Two chatzeros, one is interior, the other is exterior. Meaning an interior chatzer means that he is landlocked, and the only way for him to get out to the street is to go through the exterior chatzer. In the exterior chatzer lives an Amma Aretz. The Mishnah tells us, it's a Mishnah, it's a Tosefta, it is, whatever it is, it's a something of Tanayim. It tells us that if you live in the interior chatzer, you can leave everything outside. Leave out your fruit, your dishes, everything. Don't worry, the Amma Aretz is not going to come into your property and touch your stuff. Good. That's difficult. Difficult for Rav, because Rav said just a moment ago that if you're neighboring with an Amma Aretz and you leave anything out in your yard, you assume that he reaches over and he touches it. Even though it's divided by Mesipas, it doesn't matter, he reaches over and touches it. So the Gemara says Rav will defend himself in the following manner. The in the case of the interior versus the exterior, you're landlocked, but at the same time, your property line is clearly defined. If he goes into your property, where is he going? Meaning, he's not going out to the street. The street's the other way. So the only thing he's doing is trespassing. Oh, okay, fine. If you catch him trespassing and you gave him no right to do so, so he can simply say, you're trespassing on my property. I'm going to call the police. You have no right to be here. So that's what's called nitfas alav keganav. In the case of the two bordering lands, where the only thing that separates them is only this little masipas, you know, if he steps over, if he extends his hand, it's not, he shouldn't, obviously, and you don't want him to touch your stuff, but nitfas alav keganav, right? You're going to be able to call the police on him. He's a ganav. He's definitely intruding. He's definitely encroaching, but he's not, that's not nitfas alav keganav. Okay, so that's a defense of Rav and the difference between the two cases. Tashma, the Gemara then challenges Rav Yochanan. Rav Shem Gamliel Amar, gago shochav alamala megago shal ama aretz. Let's say you have two adjacent rooftops, but they're not exactly parallel with one another. Remember, back in those days, the rooftops were flat, accessible. People left stuff on the rooftops. People left fruit out on the rooftops. And let's say you have two contiguous rooftops, but they're not parallel with one another. Says the Braisa, again, it's a Tosefta, that what you can do is you the chaver, spread out your fruit, spread out your kelim on your rooftop, provided that the Amma Aretz cannot reach over and touch it. Kasha le Rav Yochanan, that's difficult for Rav Yochanan. Because just a moment ago, Rav Yochanan said, in the two bordering chatzeros that's separated only by a mesipas, which is not much of a separation, so we learned that he's going to reach over, according to Rav Yochanan, he will not reach over and touch your stuff because of the separation. And meanwhile, on the rooftop, in the Tosefta, it says he can only do it if he can't reach over. The Gemara says it's different. Rav Yochanan says the case of the rooftop is different. Why? Because you catch him with his hand over on your rooftop, he can give a good excuse. Why did I do that? I'll tell you why I did that. Meima Amar imitsure ka mimtsura. He could tell you imitsure ka mimtsura. Rashi over here offers the following pshat. Rashi offers two pshatim in terms of what exactly this means. What's the excuse of the Amma Aretz that his hand is over on your rooftop? Right. So one pshat Rashi says is that he's measuring. Right, the God kemitzarna ani mechav lemidas binyan shani rotz lemdo lekach hoshatati es yadi. My hand is in your airspace on your rooftop because I was just measuring what's the distance between where my roof ends and where your roof begins. That's number one. Loshanach Rashi says another thing he hears from the Gaonim, mit mogeg ani. I was just stretching. My arm is over on your rooftop. No, I was just standing at the edge of my rooftop, and I was just stretching. That's all.
It's a matter of height. You could give the same exactly when they're adjacent properties. It's a matter of the height.
Correct. Correct. Tashma gago shel chaver b'tzad gago shel am haaretz. Also chaver shotech sham peretz v'mineich sham kelim. V'af al pi shiyado shel am haaretz magatzo sham. It says here in the Tosefta, if your two rooftops are contiguous, but there's a clear demarcation of where your rooftop ends and where his begins, spread out all your fruit on your rooftop. Don't worry about the amar. It's kashal rav. Once again, it's difficult. Amacharav lavika reshim and gamliel dekai kavasiya nedamik reshim and gamliel. Look, you're right. Tosefta is certainly against me, but didn't we just learn the opinion of reshim and gamliel? Didn't reshim and gamliel say that we're worried that he's going to encroach on the other person's property? I hold like Rav Shimon Gamliel. You're right. You did quote a Tosefta that goes against me, but I pass on like Rav Shimon Gamliel. Period. Good. All right, that takes us to the end of that discussion. But the Mishnayos are going to continue along the same theme. The theme so far has been, when do we concern ourselves that he is comfortable and left alone with my wine, he's going to go ahead and touch my wine, agitate my wine, and create Yai Nisach. Boleshes Shenichnasa Leir. You have a troop of soldiers coming into town. Rashi says, Chel al Shem Shemechapsim uvechotrin karilu boleshes, kedematagaminan, vechapes uvalash. Boleshes is an Aramaic term. It refers to soldiers, troops of soldiers. It means they search. They go into town, they go into people's houses, and they ransack the place. Okay. Bishah Shalom. Let's say it's not wartime. So for the most part, it's peaceful. It's okay, right? So Chavis Pesuchos Asuras Asumas Mutaras. So if the barrel's open and the troop of non-Jews come through the town, so anything that has been opened already, so now we have to worry about the fact that they're going to go into the house. They see the open Yayin Esach. Look, they're not in a rush. They're in no hurry. So they're going to put their hand in and they're going to agitate and they're going to do Yayin Esach. Excuse me. If, however, the barrel is closed, not a problem. We're not going to assume they're going to open the barrel and put their hand in. Why would they want that? And why would they want to do that? It only creates a legal illegal entrapment for them. If it's Mashas Machama, if however it's wartime, which means that it's not calm, everyone is crazed. So therefore we assume that all the wine is fine, because during wartime, even though, you know, they could use a little help from their gods, I'm sure. At least they think so. But still, they're not going to go through the trouble of doing Yayin Esach, of agitating your wine. They got bigger concerns in their lives right now. Good. The Gemara is short. I have a short little piece of Gemara over here in Minu. The Gemara quotes a Mishnah in Ksuvos. Ir shechavshu acharkom kol kahana shebesocha psulos. A city that is taken over by a marauding troop. So all the wives of Kohanim are going to be forbidden to their husbands. Now the halacha is, it's an unfortunate halacha, it's a sad halacha, that if a wife of a Kohen is violated, she is prohibited to her husband. And so when you have a city that's ransacked, so the concern is that that the wives were violated, and so consequently they will be prohibited to their husbands. Okay? It's extraordinarily unfortunate. So, but the Gemara is bothered by the following. In our Mishnah, we learned that when they're running through the town, because it's wartime, so they're not going to touch anything. They're not going to touch any of the wine. And meanwhile, as they are running through the town, the Mishnah Ksuvos describes, they are going to spend the time to violate the women. And the Gemara gives a very, very sad answer, but touches on a significant truth. Amar of Mari Lanasech Ein Panai Liv Ol Yesh Panai. There's time for some things in this Taned, there's not time for other things. So, to make Nisach Yayin, it's not much of a Yetzahara. So for that, they won't have enough time to do that. But if it's to violate women, so that, unfortunately, they're going to fit into their schedule, even though right now they don't really have the time to do so, but for that, they're going to make time. Okay. So that's the difference between our Mishnah over here and the Mishnah in Ksuvos. All right. The next Mishnah is coming up, deal with benefiting from Yayin Esach. As we have said time and again throughout our Masechta, Once something is Yayin Nesach, you cannot directly benefit from Yayin Nesach. Yayin Nesach is Aser B'Shtiyah, the Aser V'Hana'ah. You cannot benefit from it. Even if they just touched the wine, but still we assume that part of the Gzeira D'Rabbanan is any wine that was handled by a non-Jew, Stam Yeinam, gets the prohibition of Yayin Nesach. You're not allowed to drink it, and you're not allowed to benefit from it. Okay? Good. So here we have the following scenario. Umnam she'isor she'sholach lamo b'kochavim chavisho yayin nesach b'scharam. Let's say you're a Jew, and you're employed by a non-Jew. And at the end of the week, the non-Jew comes over and says to you, you did such a great job, I'm going to pay you. Right? But you know what? Not like in weeks past where I've been paying you money. This week I'm going to pay you wine. And he hands him over a barrel of wine. Now the wine certainly has value, right? It's not cash, but it certainly has value. And the employer thinks, okay, good, I'm paying him. You, however, realize that you've just been handed Yayin Nesach. You can't. What are you going to do with it? There's nothing you can do with it. You can't drink it and you can't sell it. And you, there's nothing to do with it.
Do we know for sure this is not Stam Yayin?
Even if it is Stam Yayin is Aser B'Hana'ah. You're not allowed to benefit from it. Right? Again, the Rishonim later on say that, look, our Goyim nowadays, they're not really religious. So, right, Rashi quoted the name of the Goyim, that when our Goyim touch wine, it doesn't become Aser B'Hana'ah. Good. We'll go back to the time of the Mishnah, the time of the Gemara, and they were dealing with religious Ovdei Avodah Zarah. So every single time they touched it, the wine is Aser B'Shtiyah U'V'Hana'ah. Fine.
So they couldn't exchange it for money.
And you can't exchange it. So the Mishnah says, Mutar Lomar Tein Lanu Es Dameha. So you can go to your employer and say, look, don't give me the wine. Give me its value. Right? Rashi reminds us, we learned not that long ago, about a week ago, the Gemara that says, let's say you are a creditor, and you go over to your borrower and you say to him, okay, new, it's time to pay up. And all he's got is Yayin Nesach, and you say to him, look, I don't care how you get the money, but you got to pay me. Right? So we learned earlier that he can sell off his Yayin Nesach and pay you. That's not considered direct benefit from the Yayin Nesach. He owes you money. How he gets the money, that's his issue. That's not your issue. Right?
But if you tell him to sell the Yayin Nesach.
Correct. Very good. Right? You can't tell him to sell the Yayin Nesach, but you could just simply say to him, look, I need to get paid. Here also, right, same idea. Rashi says it's the same basic idea. Right? The employee owes you money. Your employer owes you money. You worked and now you're owed money. He's got Yayin Nesach, so you say to him, look, I don't want the Yayin Nesach, but I do want my money. So you do what you need to do in order to get me the money. Right? But without saying it, basically you're saying to him, you sell the Yayin Nesach, and you get the money, and you give me money. Fine. Mishenichnas al Rishu San Aser. However, the Mishnah says, what if you accept the Yayin Nesach? So now you blew it. Now it's too late. Because now you receive the Yayin Nesach, so he paid you. And the fact now that you're stuck with the Yayin Nesach, that's going to be your problem. And unfortunately, that's no longer his problem. It's now your problem. Good. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav Mutal Adam, Amar Lo V'Kochavim Seve, Hafes Alai Manas HaMelech. King's coming around collecting taxes. You say to your non-Jewish neighbor, look, can you spot me right now? Can you help me out? I like this Rashi, because Rashi over here talks about the type of taxes and the percentage of taxes we're talking about. Look at the first Rashi in the Gemara. Arnuna shayunos nimitzvah osehem, umibehem osehem. There was some sort of tax. It is like an income tax. It was a tax that was a percentage of your
animals,
of your income. A certain amount of, a percentage of grains, percentage of animals. Rashi says, Isser, 10%. Nice. A lot better than what we're doing. Now, you have to give him a percentage of your wine. So you go over to your non-Jewish neighbor and you say to him, look, hafes alai Rashi. Hafes alai afagav dekal yav ha'ev kochav yayin nesach. Can you appease him for me? And even though you know full well that whatever the guy is going to give to the king or the tax collector is going to be yayin nesach. V'hai Yisrael hu par'e damea. You'll reimburse your friend. He's not gifting you. You'll reimburse him, but for the time being, can you give him your wine and I'll pay you back? And Rashi gives the explanation. Why is that okay? Aren't you benefiting from Yain Nesach? So Rashi says no, because you're asking your friend to pay your taxes. He doesn't have to give the tax collector Yain Nesach. He could have just as well given him money. Money would have worked as well. It just, the tax is just simply, give me the value of 10%. I don't need the actual 10% of wine. If he decides to pay with wine, that's his decision, but that's not your command. He's not acting as a proxy of you, therefore it's fine. It's totally fine. Back to the Gemara. Mace for the Gemara challenges. Al yomar adam lavikochavim ol tachti laotzar. You cannot go over to an ovikochavim, to a non-Jew, and say to him, ol tachti, go into my place, go into my stead. Right? In other words, there's somebody who needs to get paid off, and Rashi gives a couple of pshatim who exactly this is, but you have to pay off somebody, and you can't say, you'll be in my stead. So Amalei...
Does the concept of shlichut apply to non-Jews?
Yeah.
You make some of the shlichut who can do the mitzvah themselves, so that's how
they're eligible. Correct. But here, you're designating him as your proxy to pay off your taxes.
So it's not real shlichut.
It's not shlichut in the sense that you're shlichut a mitzvah. Shlichut meaning, I give him power of attorney. Yeah. He's me right now. He's representing me. So, ol tachti lo tzar. Amar le Rav, ol tachti lo tzar kamart. Halo damya lo laha. The Gemara says, Rav says it's a bad analogy. It's not ol tachti. When you're giving instruction, it's not, you're not saying to your neighbor, you take my place. If anything, we're going to compare it to the following. Aval amar lo, malteini mina otzar. Look, this guy's coming after me. Do me a favor. Just step in the way. Meaning, pay him off, do whatever you need to do to get him off my back. And obviously, later on, I'll make good with you. Right? And in that part of the Braisa, that's fine. You're totally allowed to do that. You're not giving him clear instruction in terms of how to pay and with what to pay. You're just simply saying to him, look, tax collector's coming after me. Stop him. Get him away from me. And if he decides on his own to pay with the Yain Nesach, that wasn't your instruction, that wasn't your direction, therefore you're allowed to do that. Rav says the same thing over here. So when you, the Arnuna comes and you want to pay the Arnuna, and you say to your non-Jewish neighbor, look, can you pay him? And he decides on his own to pay with the Yain Nesach, that's his prerogative, that's his decision, you're not directly benefiting from Yain Nesach. Okay. Good. Next Mishnah, great piece of Mishnah over here, great piece of discussion coming up. How do you sell wine to a non-Jew? It's really that simple. It's a simple issue and it's a simple problem. You see, back in the time of the Rishonim, so they made their living by making wine, making and selling wine. Right? Rashi was a wine seller. That was his job, that was his parnasa. Now the problem is, and again, let's deal more in the abstract than the theoretical, because again, Rashi would tell you that his non-Jews during his day were not real Ovdei Avodah Zarah. Okay, fine. So, but just in the more theoretical, in the more abstract, the issue is very real. Because what's going to end up happening is that when you sell the non-Jew wine, the moment he touches it, it's going to be Yai Nesach. So now if he touches it, rendering it Yai Nesach, and now you sell it to him, you're benefiting from Yai Nesach. So the name of the game over here is sell it before it becomes Yai Nesach, right? So what the Mishnah now is going to be dealing with is how do you do that? How do you sell the wine so that before he touches it, the sale is complete, and now he touches it and he makes it Yai Nesach? Okay, but you sold it already, and it's fine, it's totally fine. And in other words, one of the fundamental assumptions of this Mishnah is the following. Even though after you sell it, he's going to render Yai Nesach, that's not a problem. That's not an issue. Right? What he decides to do with the wine afterwards, he puts his hands in it, he agitates it, but fine. In other words, but the fact of the matter is that when it was in your possession, it wasn't Yai Nesach. When you sold it, wasn't Yai Nesach. What happens afterwards is no longer your issue.
But you can still sell it to him knowing that he's going to use it for that purpose? Yeah.
If he tells you, it's a fair point. If he tells you, look, I got this great holiday coming up and my idol needs wine and I want to buy wine. So you're right. So you're 100% right. Then you can't do that. You're abetting, aiding and abetting in the proliferation of Avodah Zarah.
But the in terms of transaction, don't the same laws of transaction apply to non-Jews and Jews in terms of the kinyan of picking up?
So that's going to be our discussion. That's going to be the Gemara's discussion is going to revolve around. It's all acquisition today, okay. Right? It's kinyan. Kinyan is going to be the discussion of the remainder of today's daf. So let's start with the Mishnah. Hamocha yain lovi kochavim pasak achila madad damav mutarim. Madad achila pasak damav asurim. Mishnah gives it to us really simple. Okay, although it won't be that simple, but the way the Mishnah presents it is so straightforward. If you sell wine to a non-Jew, if you agree to how much the sale is going to be, right? So him and I now are totally understanding this is the amount. So pasak achila madad. So before you measured, you've determined the price. Dam of mutarim. Good. The sale has been made before the wine has been rendered yayin esach, and therefore the money that you walk away with from the sale is good and clean money.
Is that total price or the price per unit?
I think price per unit, and you'll see through the Gemara that seems to be the pshat.
It's
however, madad achila pasak dam of asurim. However, if it was measured before the prices was established, so then the proceeds of that sale are going to be usur because it was rendered yayin esach before the sale was made. Look at Rashi. Hamocha yayinu le'ove kochavim. Pasuk im amaus ashel amad of damav mutar mefarsh begemar taima ika demukala mishum mishicha be'ove kochavim kanem. So Rashi says, look, there's a couple ways to understand this. One way to understand this is the following. That mishicha is konem. That when the guy takes the wine, picks it up, and brings it closer to him, so that creates a kinyan. Hilkach, therefore, kishemodeid hainu mashicha. Measuring is an act of mashicha, right? In other words, he's measuring out how much wine, the kanya ove kochava miyad, and therefore the kinyan is done right away. Dahava le Yisrael zuzigabe ove kochava b'alva'a. Which is great because now it means that he acquired the wine before he touched the wine, and that's exactly where you want to be. You want to be that the acquisition takes place before he actually touches the wine. So if Mishicha, if all he needs to do is pick it up and bring it closer to him, or in our case measure it out, he didn't touch the wine. And so consequently he did a kinyan.
Why didn't he touch the wine if he's touching it to move it?
The barrel, but did he pay? We're assuming he paid.
He didn't Rashi says he didn't have to. In other words, because once the kinyan is made, once we say there's an acquisition, where the money is doesn't matter.
Okay, I'm taking it.
Because I'm taking it. Oh, money, you owe me the money. Right? But the more important issue is when is the kinyan actually transpire? So when the kinyan transpires before he actually touches the wine, perfect. Okay, we'll get to your point in just a moment. Right, look at the next Rashi. Madad achila pasak damav asurim. Dovik kocham lo kanya b'mashicha. Kevin de lo pasak damav. Lo samcha daite. If, however, we did not come to terms in terms of how much I'm buying the wine for, so even while measuring it out, it's no kinyan. Because you haven't agreed. So even though he picked it up, look, I pick up this cup over here. It's Ben's cup. Oh, it's nice. It's hot.
Careful.
Right? I pick it up. I didn't make a kinyan on it. We didn't agree to anything yet. So in other words, picking it up by itself, an act of just picking something up is not enough. There has to be, as Rashi describes, smichas das. There has to be some sort of agreement, some level of confidence that by me picking it up, I'm making a kinyan. If we don't agree on price yet, an act of picking it up is nothing. That's not a kinyan. And now, what's going to happen is that he's going to touch the wine, and it's still your wine. Okay, now it's the Yayin Esach. And therefore, consequently, what's going to come out from that is that you're selling now Yayin Esach. You can't sell Yayin Esach because you can't get benefit from Yayin Esach. Okay. Now, Rashi is about to tell us that there's another way to understand the Mishnah. Okay. Hold, on that, because we're going to start the Gemara and we're going to start the basic discussion about how to make Kinyanim. And we'll come back later to the second approach within Rashi. Amar Ameimar. Start with the Gemara. Mishicha be'oved kochavim kona. All right. Let's do a little bit of background and then we're going to go forward with Ameimar. How do you do Kinyanim? How do you do transactions in Jewish law? Right? So the Mishnah in Kedushin tells us that when it comes to metalkim, when it comes to movable items, so Mishicha. The correct answer is Mishicha. Meaning, I go over, I reach over, and I'm going to say pick up the cup, but that's not Mishicha in the most technical sense. Mishicha means I draw closer to me. That is how I make a kinyan on metalkim, and that's from one Jew to another Jew. Money? Money's not so important. Meaning, because money is just simply payment of the item. But we're talking about acquisition. We're talking about kinyanim. How do I make an acquisition? So the correct answer is Mashiach. Okay. And what the discussion over here revolves around is, do the same laws apply in terms of transactions between Jew and non-Jew? Okay? Are we going to use the same model of Mashiach, which is the model of transaction from Jew to Jew? Is the same methodology applied from Jew to non-Jew as well? So Amemar starts off the whole discussion by saying, yes. Mashiach ba'ovid kochavim kona, that it does work by a Jew to a non-Jew as well. And the fact of the matter is that so when he is Moshe, he draws an item away from me, he acquired the item. Money? Okay, he owes me the money. But the actual acquisition comes in the form of Mashiach.
But that's for two items.
As soon as he touches it, before even, no. As soon as he touches it, right?
But if he's touching the barrel? Touching the barrel doesn't make it Yai Nesach. He's got to touch the actual wine.
But by shaking it, I mean, if he tilts it in any way, shakes it, it won't become the Yai Nesach.
This would be two.
We did discuss earlier an idea about koach.
Right. I mean, right. It's direct force.
No, but him, no. If you know, it's not going to be enough. He's got to actually touch the actual wine itself. We've been discussing, all this discussion has been opening up the barrel, putting his hand in, right. Just touching the barrel by itself is not enough.
So Mashiachah between Jew and Jew, Mashiachah between non-Jew and non-Jew is the same as between
that's
Jew
according to Amemar. Right? The Gemara now is presenting the opinion of Amemar, and here Amemar gives a proof. It's interesting. Right? Proofs usually come in the form of the Mishnah or a Braisa, a Tosefta, something along those lines. Listen to his proof. His proof is so interesting. Teda. You should know, the Hani Parsai, Mishadre Pardashne Lahadadi. Look at the Persians. The Persians send pardashne to one another, velo hadri behu, and they never retract. Okay? So you see, empirically, look around, look at the Persians around us, and they hand pardashne to one another, and there's never a retraction, because they understand that the moment that they hand it to one another, that's Mashiach, and that's a kinyan, and that's why there's never a retraction. What is a pardashne? So what are we talking about? So Rashi gives two pshatim. The first pshat in Rashi is super controversial. The first pshat in Rashi is that we're talking about a gift. Right? Rashi says, Pardashne Doron. We're talking about a gift. This first pshat in Rashi is highly debatable. Because our whole point over here is that we're talking about business transactions. We're talking about Mashiach in exchange for me acquiring something, I'm going to have to pay you. Right? That's the whole topic over here. We're talking about selling wine. So that's Rashi's first example. It's hard to imagine that a Maimar would use a gift, which, although a gift, by the way, is a transaction, of course. But still, that would not be the model in which we're discussing right now. We're not discussing the gift, we're discussing a business transaction, money for an item. Okay, so that's the first pshat in Rashi. Rashi gives another pshat. Look at the next Rashi. Rashi quotes in the name of the Gaonim. This is a better pshat in that it fits in better to the discussion of the Gemara. Pardashni Mishesh lo kor chitim lemkor. Okay? Rashi describes a big sale, a sale of kor chitim. Kor chitim is 30 sa'ah. I don't know how to give you an exact measurement, but it's a lot. Right, it's a storehouse of wheat. Now, if you're going to buy that kind of wheat, so you want to know, am I buying good quality or am I buying bad quality? So what do I do? Rashi goes on to describe. So what you do is you send a sample. And so you send just a kav. Kav is just a small sampling of the wheat, right? And I know what's going to happen. The seller is obviously going to give the best sample that he could possibly give, but still, this is the way they conducted business back then, so he would now give a sample. V'im me'akev halokech osto kav etzla. And then Rashi describes that if the buyer says, looks at the sample and says, oh, this is good stuff, and he actually is moshech, and he pulls it towards him, mitkayim ha-mekach. Sale is done, sale is complete. He has now, not only, of course, purchased that little sample that he got, but he purchased the whole core as well.
This is after he sent the gift?
No, this is the second pshat altogether.
Okay, so
this is not the gift pshat. This is now it's so fine. It's a totally new pshat in terms of what the pardashne is. And the imeinu chafetz by machzir, otherwise he'll return it. So the point over here is as follows, in the second pshat, that I give him a sample, if he takes the sample, kinyan is done. Good. Point made. That you see over here, that when it comes to the world of kinyanim, by a non-Jew, and by the way Rashi is describing it, this is non-Jew to non-Jew. Ostensibly, nothing changes, even though I added a Jew to the equation, meaning Jew to non-Jew, or non-Jew to Jew. But from non-Jew to non-Jew, Mashiach is a form of acquisition. Good. Rav Ashi Amar, back to the Gemara. Rav Ashi Amar, La'olam Eim Lecha Mashiach Bavi Kuchavim Eino Kona. Okay? Rav Ashi says, look, I don't like that as a proof. What you're not doing is you're not bringing a Mishnah, you're not bringing a Braisa, you're not bringing a Tosefta. You are just simply showing, you're pointing to the common business practice of the local Persians, and you're saying, look, they draw something, and there's never a retraction. You see, that's a formal kinyan. So Rav Ashi says, I don't think that's an improv. V'hai de lo hadre behu. And what are you going to tell me? That empirically we see that they never retract from the sale? De ramos ruchuhu de nikita lohu. Arrogance of the Persians. Persians are such an arrogant people that they're not going to retract, not because there was a formal kinyan that was made, but simply because they're arrogant. Fine. So, but it's not a legal issue. It's a, you know, the Persians. That's all. Amr.
Not the Jewish ones.
Right. Not the Jewish. Wait. They're Jews. They're not Persians. Please. Amr Vashi Menamin Allah. Mida Amalu Rav Lahanusav. You say, okay. The Gemara continues along this discussion. All right, so the main topic of today now is going to become, how does a guy make a king and how does he make an acquisition? So right now at the forefront is a Meimar, and the Meimar says that the way they make an acquisition is through Mashiach. Good. He uses the Persians as his model, because when they do business transactions, they do it with Mashiach. Rav Ashi is not impressed with that proof. Now the Gemara says, Rav Ashi says, Mena Amin Allah. How do I know? How do I know that that acquisition can be done with a non-Jew via Mashiach? So we know it because Rav gave instructions. Rav told his local wine sellers, here's how you sell wine to a non-Jew, and give very clear instruction. So here are the instructions of Rav to wine sellers. Amalahu Rav Lahanu Savyusa. Rav says to his wine sellers, by the way, Sav Yusa, wine sellers, we saw this word yesterday in the Daf. I showed you yesterday the Rashi told us that word Sav Yusa comes from the word Zolel V'Sovei. When the Torah describes the Ben Soro More, it describes him as being as a drunkard. So the word Sovei, Samach Beis Aleph, is related to wine. Here, Sav Yusa is not a pejorative term, it just simply means a wine seller. Ki Kal Yisu Chamalov De Kochavim Shakle Zuze Minayu Vehadar Kalyan Lahu. When you sell wine to your non-Jews, get the money first. Take the money and then sell it to them. Oh. So you see over here that what creates the kinyan? Not Mashiach.
So they're prepaying?
They need to prepay. Rav's instructions are they need to prepay. If they don't pre-pray, so let me finish reading this. What if they don't have any money? Right? They come to you. Right? It happens all the time in business. They come to you and they say to you, look, spot us. I don't have any money, but I do want to buy it. So let me buy in credit. So Rav says to his wine sellers, extend the credit. But Uzfinu Vahadar Shakilu, actually give them money and let them buy with the money. Now, all it is now is an outstanding loan. But they paid for the merchandise. Okay. And then Rav continues. Because if you don't do this, because if you don't do this, here's what's going to happen. They're going to be rendering the wine yayin esech while it's still your wine, and now what you're selling is yayin esech, and you're getting money for yayin esech, and you know the money that you get for yayin esech is prohibited. Okay, good. Now, look, as far as Rav is concerned, he's not saying anything about how the kinyan is made, but all you need to do is just reread what Rav just said, and you realize, wait a second, it's all about the money. In other words, he's clearly telling his wine sellers, he's giving them very clear instructions. How do you render a kinyan? How do you render a sale? Money. And if they don't have money, give them money and let them pay for the wine, and afterwards you give them the wine, because after they paid for it, the wine now is theirs, and be done with it. Now, obviously, this is not going to be good for Amemar. Because Amemar said that Mashiach is Kona, and over here Rav is talking all about the money. The Isa Kedach the Gemara articulates Mashiach bo v'kochavim Kona midamashcha v'kochavim Kanya. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. If Mashiach is the means of transaction, so let them pull the wine to them, not meaning the barrels of wine. The kinyan is done, and yai nesach lo havi adenagabe. And it's not yayin esek until they actually touch the wine, but that's after transaction, that's post-transaction, and it's not your problem. You sold good wine, you sold clean wine. Okay, fine. And obviously this presents a big problem for Amemar. How do you reconcile Rav's instructions to his wine sellers with the ruling of Amemar that Mashiach is the kinyan? Okay, so here we go. We're going to try. The Gemara starts off like this. Second line down on Ein Aleph Amud Beis. Ideka Kayal Virami Lemanad Yisrael Hachanami Lotzricha. Look, if we're talking about measuring into utensils of a Jew, so then you know what? You're absolutely right. Meaning that the transaction will be complete before the before they touch it and they render it into Yayin Esech. You're right. Lo tzricha de kakayel v'rami lamana de ovei kochavim. So the Gemara says, you know what we're talking about? We're talking about when you're measuring it into their utensils. Meaning they come into your store, they bring in their utensils, and you're pouring it into their utensils. And so what Rav says is, whoa, stop, don't do that. Don't pour your wine into their utensils, because you know what happens? The moment you pour it into their utensils, it's Yayin Esech, and the transaction hasn't occurred yet. So what you'll do in order to avoid the problem is you'll have them pay for it first, then you'll pour it into their utensils. Okay, good. So the Gemara says, okay, but let's get even more technical about the actual transaction. Kimat la avir damana kanye, Yayin Esech lo havi ad damat la arayhu damana. So the Gemara says, wait a second. Even if we were to look at that moment when you poured your wine into their utensils, I could still differentiate. And I could say the following. When is it that they make a kinyan? The moment it goes into the airspace of their kelim. When does it become yayin esech? When it hits the floor of the kli. Meaning that in terms of the world of acquisition is concerned, entering the airspace, the moment the liquid enters into the airspace, it's theirs. It's their kli, it enters into their airspace, it's theirs. When does it become Yayin Esech? Only when it hits the floor. Okay. So, right, we are in the world of legalities over here. But that's what the Gemara does. The Gemara is in the world of legalities. And the Gemara says, I could still tell you that the acquisition transpires before the wine becomes the Ayin Netzach.
But the hitting the floor is not as what makes it the Ayin Netzach. The assumption is that there's some residual Ayin Netzach at the bottom.
Correct.
Of the floor.
Correct.
With it.
Correct.
Just hitting the floor. That makes
agreed.
It.
Agreed. Absolutely agreed. Shma Mina needs a chibur. So the Gemara says, okay, so what do you see over here? Needs a chibur. Let's go back to a discussion that we had some time ago about how the flow connects. And so it must be, says the Gemara, that when you're pouring wine into their kli, so the moment that you have hit the floor and you have the flow, the Yayin Netzach goes back to the flow and goes back to the source. Oh. Okay, good. And now the whole thing is the Yayin Netzach. Now I understand why Rav says they got to pay for it first. Now you remember, when it comes to this issue of Nitzok Chibor, Gemara wants to stay away from that topic because it's a controversial topic. The Gemara did not want to conclude on that topic. So the Gemara, when the Gemara says over here, Shema Mina Nitzok Chibor, what the Gemara is saying is, oh, so what do you want to tell me now? That the flow connects? Remember, we don't want to enter into that discussion. So Lo ida nakilei over kocham lekli biyadei hachinami lo tricha demanach aara. So the Gemara says, point well taken. Okay, let's stay away from the issue of nitzo chibur. If the guy is holding the kli in his hands, so then you know what? You're right. It's fine. Meaning, in other words, stay away from the flowing issue. Stay away from the flow issue. If he holds it in his hand, you're absolutely right. The acquisition is made the moment it goes into the airspace, and it doesn't become Yayin Netzach until it hits the floor. And you're fine. And Rav's instructions wouldn't be needed then. They wouldn't need to prepay then. So what's the issue? When he puts it on the floor. And he's not holding it. Okay, so now he puts it on the floor and he's not holding it, so he hasn't made a kinyan yet. You poured the wine into his cup, but he hasn't holding the cup right now. And so now what happens? It's Yayin Netzach. And it's still yours. And then when he picks it up and he pulls it to him, now he made a kinyan, but from your perspective, it's too late because it's already been Yayin Netzach. So the Gemara says, wait a second, what about another issue? I'm sorry, lokana lokeach. There's another issue, which is the following. When I bring my utensils into someone else's property and he puts something in my utensils, another big discussion. Can my utensils, albeit being in your property, acquire on my behalf? Does that work? Again, it's subject to a debate. But what you're telling me over here is because Rav demands that you prepay, it means that even though it's their kli, and even though I'm pouring it into their kli does not acquire on their behalf. The Gemara says, "Lo, lo memlecha kana, lo keach." Gemara says, again, let's stay away from that issue as well. Let's say that in general, it does create a kinyan. V'hacha b'mayas kinan, kigon di'ika akavas yayin, apumei dekuz nasa, dekamakama insachle. The Gemara says, you know what the issue is over here? The bottle that you're pouring into has a lip around it. And while you're pouring the wine in, it flows in over the lip. And on the lip of their kli, it has residual wine, as Ben described just a moment ago. And so what happens is that before the wine even enters into the airspace, it already has been rendered Yayin Netzach. Okay. So in other words, even before the wine goes into their utensil, you want to tell me the utensil acquires good. You want to tell me that it's a chibur, also fine. But even before the wine goes into their airspace, already the wine becomes Yayin Netzach at the very lip of the kli. And so therefore, when it goes into their kli, before the transaction is made, it's already been rendered Yayin Netzach. And that's why Rav says you got to prepay. You have to have them prepay for it so that the transaction takes place before the wine is rendered Yayin Netzach. So the Gemara says, "Uchaman de lo k'Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, de Rishon Gamliel Hamar Yimaker Kulo of the Kochavim, Chutz Mei Demay Yayin Netzach Shabo." And on this topic, we also have to sidestep another issue, which is Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Remember, again, some time ago we learned in Avodah Zarah that according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, if you have a mixture of Yayin Netzach and non-Yayin Netzach, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel allows you to sell the non-Yayin Netzach component of the mixture, and just simply ignore the Ayin Nesech component of the mixture. Right, just deduct the value of the Ayin Nesech. That's what Shimon Gamliel does. So over here, we're talking now about a couple of drops of Ayin Nesech that get mixed in. If you're Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, you would be allowed to sell the entire mixture sans the Ayin Nesech. So we're sidestepping Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. So the Gemara, we're just going to do one more line and we'll stop for today. Midihu time elal rav, ha'amar rav, halach Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, chavetz b'chavetz, avalo, yayin b'yayin. Rav modified Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Rav said that even in the world of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, that's only an allowance to deduct the Yayin Nesech if we're talking about a mixture of barrels. Meaning, I have 100 barrels, and one of those barrels is Yayin Nesech. So then Rav would say, I follow like Rav Shimon Gamliel, I'll allow the sale of the barrels. One of them is Yayin Nesech Brown, I don't know which one it is. Good, I'll deduct one barrel off the sale price. And that Rav would allow. But if you're talking about actual wines that get mixed together, the whole thing now has been rendered Yayin Nesech, and you would not be able to sell anything. Okay, let's conclude. Okay, there's a lot. There's a lot of ideas that come up over here. It's an extremely technical, but I happen to enjoy this. It's extremely technical Gemara. Okay, the big question of the day is, how is a non-Jew do a transaction? How does he make a kinyan? So a Maimar's opinion is he does so through Mashiach. Right? That is the opinion of a Maimar. The Gemara, a Maimar uses the Persians as his proof. Because the Persians, that's how they do business transactions, through Mashiach. Rav Ashi says no. And Rav Ashi says, and I know it's not true because what Rav's instructions were. Rav's instructions to his wine sellers are, before you sell wine to a non-Jew, make sure they prepay. Because once they prepay, now they acquired it, and they didn't gain possession of the wine yet, so it's not yet Yayin Nesech, and that's how you'll do it. Right? Why did Rav give those instructions? Because Rav feels that if what you do is that you pour them the wine first, you're going to render it Yayin Nesech, and then and only then is the sale done, but you're selling Yayin Nesech, you can't do that. And based on a series of various scenarios, the Gemara goes on to point out how it is that when you pour the wine for the non-Jew, it's going to be Yayin Nesech before the kinyan is made. Does Rav necessarily subscribe to the idea that Mashiach is not Kona? So that's debatable, right? A Maimar would tell you throughout the whole discussion, no. In general, he would allow Mashiach to be a Kenyan. What Rav was describing was a scenario where he wasn't holding the cup, where the wine was being poured into his cup. He wasn't holding it, and as described, there was like little residual wine on the lid, on the rim. So that's why when he poured it in, it became Yayin Nesech even before he was able to do a Mashiach. And that's why Rav's instructions were, have them prepay. So right now, where we're left off right now, is a Maimar's position that Mashiach is Kona. Rav Ashi disagrees, and where Rav stands on this issue is debatable. Okay, stop over here.